Yeah, better guess?
Sort of. I wondered why the killer would go for Johannes Ford rather than any of us, and why he'd been put right away from the rest of us with an empty room between him and us. Like they wanted him isolated.
You think it was the family?
Johannes took films. Could be they really don't like being put in movies.
Why?
Could be lots of reasons. I'm starting to wonder if this place is a fraud. Their history. Barons for so long. Could be they're all well-known chillers and they just don't want their faces flashed around on film in case they get recognized.
They've smashed all his equipment. All the film's been pulled out and mangled and torn. Doesn't look like any could be saved.
Projector broken as well. I guess they'd want that spoiled too.
You got a theory about them, Doc? Let's all share it.
I am only too aware of the reputation that I have with all of you. A foolish, time-trawled dotard whose brain and imagination carry him too often into dark woods and pastures peculiar. No, I have an idea that falls into the land of fairy and should not yet be exposed to the ridicule of others. But whatever my guess, I can only urge the greatest caution while in this place and with these people. The greatest caution.
Norman brought them the tragic news of the murder. It was just a little after six, and the building was stirring, the smell of fresh baking bread drifting up from the first floor. Ryan had insisted that they should feign ignorance of the death of Johannes Ford, to avoid any suspicion falling on them. So they all appeared suitably shocked at the announcement.
We believe that someone from the Ville who bore a grudge against us broke in. A door had been forced around the back by the garden. Master Thomas has suggested that the films taken by Johannes might have upset the villagers. Oh, those poor sentimental superstitious folks, they could have believed that Johannes was somehow robbing them of their spirits.
Their immortal souls. Is that not a better way of putting it?
Perhaps. Yes, perhaps.
How did he go?
Oh, he'd been badly beaten, as though by a strong man in a rage, and all of his possessions were just scattered and torn apart. We shall ask questions in Brampton. Oh, yes, indeed, we shall.
Nobody saw or heard anything? Must have made some noise, the way you tell it.
Norman shifted uncomfortably from foot to foot.
Well, the house has thick walls and floors and ceilings.
And there was nothing at all left of his films?
No, sadly not. It would have been so interesting to view his materials.
What about the burial of Ford? You look after that for us?
Well, now, of course we can. He shall have as good a burial as any chrism child.
Thanks.
Norman went ahead, leaving them to make their own way along the passage and down the wide stairs. Dean insisted on helping his father.
I wouldn't mind a look at Johannes's body. I'll just be a minute.
Mildred was gone for about 3 minutes while they waited for her near the top of the staircase.
Not just beaten to hell and back, someone also drained most of the blood from his carcass.
Ryan picked his careful way down the stairs, his mind trying to unravel this latest macabre twist.
Really bright sun. Spearing through the shutters here.
Ryan could feel the warmth, and he turned his head in that direction, hesitating as he thought that he actually saw a glint of molten golden light from his right eye. But as before, he couldn't be sure, and the moment quickly passed. A woman sat at the head of the table when they reached the dining hall. Christy saw instantly that she was from the same genetic stock as Elric and Thomas, looking as though she might lie between them in terms of age. Possibly in her middle to late 30s was Christie's guess. Her hair was as fine as spun silk, so white it glittered like polished silver. She was close to 6 feet, wearing a black dress of embroidered satin with a high collar. Her skin was like Elric's and Thomas's, tight and white like parchment, stretched over sharp cheekbones like straight razors. Like Jack's, her eyes were a deep smoldering crimson, set in deep sockets. The heavy silver ring on the third finger of her left hand was shaped like a human skull, with a blood opal in its forehead.
My name is Mary Cornelius. I was so sorry to hear the tragic, untimely death of your companion.
Most death is untimely, but we thank you for your thoughts.
Sit next to me, Ryan Caudill. I can help you with your food, and you can tell me something of yourself.
I help him with the food.
Can you help him to see again, Christy Roth?
What?
I think that you heard me. You don't suffer from deafness, Christy, or poor sight. Indeed, we believe that you can see better and further than most gnomes can.
Are you implying that you can help Ryan to see again? Is that it?
The woman gestured for Christy to help Ryan to the seat at her side.
I do not imply. You and Dr. Wythe have admitted defeat over the problem of seeing. I just believe that we might be able to do a little better.
Impossible. Right now, Ryan is blind. The damage to his eye could heal itself in the next 3 or 4 days, or it might not heal at all.
You have your beliefs, Dr. Wythe. We believe in other powers.
You can make me see again?
Mary Cornelius looked at him. Despite his lack of sight, he could almost feel her eyes burning into him.
I think so. After we've finished eating, you must come to my room and we shall see. Norman, there is light piercing through a gap between the draperies and the shutters. Close it.
Dark as a dungeon down here in the mine. Get any darker and I'll bump into myself coming back. Why not throw back the draperies? It's a lovely morning. A bit of bright sunlight never hurt anybody, did it?
Mary leaned forward in her seat, staring intently at the old-timer.
There are things about many of you that puzzle us. The white hair and ruby eyes of Jack, the medical skills of the black woman, the seeing of the redhead, and you, Dr. Tanner, you puzzle us a great deal. If you stay here long enough, I think we should all be eager to ask you some searching questions. You interest us.
Doc took a half step back, as though a whip had been raised to his face.
You don't... But I disremember what you don't do.
Mary Cornelius had doused herself in a light but potent perfume. Ryan's guess was Lily of the Valley, but beneath it there was an unpleasant smell. The same dank, subterranean odor that seemed to fill every room of the mansion.
What do you want to eat, Ryan? Trout, or chicken, or veal, or prawns, super croissants, eggs benedict, or a plate of huevos rancheros? When you came to us, the skills of the kitchen had been, had been mislaid. Now they've been found again.
Plain omelet would do just fine.
A short time later, Ryan felt around the plate with the tines of his fork, checking that there was no more of the cool, leathery omelet left on it. He set down the cutlery and picked up his coffee mug.
Are you feeling all right, lover?
He's as well as can be expected, Christy. But with my help, he can be so much better.
If you can make him see again, then you've got my support. Every step of the way.
Thank you, my dear. But I believe we can manage perfectly well without your support.
Why don't you go take a flying fuck, lady?
Christy stormed off.
Dad?
It's all right, son.
What a sadly disappointing reaction. I had thought better of her. Still, let me lead you to my room, Ryan. There's so much we can do for each other. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless you're frightened of me.
Of course not.
Ryan turned to JB and the others.
Get together for a talk in our room around noon.
Sure. Take care now.
Mary's hand was on Ryan's right arm, her grip surprisingly powerful for a woman, as she led him across the galleried room, up the main stairs. They walked along a carpeted corridor, stopping in front of what Ryan guessed was the entrance to the topmost story of the mansion.
Just up here. We're nearly there.
Norman had waited until his mistress had taken Ryan out of the dining hall before he tugged back the heavy velvet draperies, releasing clouds of pale dust, the motes floating in the rectangles of bright sunlight.
Let there be light, and there was light. Makes one feel quite the little god, doesn't it?
The lady somewhat dislikes sunshine, does she not?
Norman picked his way around the room, stopping in front of Doc.
Did you hear the fable of the heron whose beak was so long that he had it trapped in a jar of gold? Yes, he perished. It's a parable of inquisitiveness, Dr. Tanner. It's a moral for us all.
The moral being to keep your beak out of other people's affairs.
Precisely. I've lived as long as I have in the employ of the Cornelius family only by studiously closing my eyes and ears and my mouth when I felt it proper to do so.
Proper? That another word for cowardly?
Cowardly? That's just another word for keeping your head when all about are losing theirs, Master.